Lopez, would you please lead us with an invocation this morning?
Certainly will, sir. Heavenly Father, we thank you for a new day, a new opportunity to do your business. We thank you for all your blessings, for your guidance, and for your presence here. Thank you, Lord. Amen.
Mr. Haas, would you please lead us in a pledge this morning?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, gentlemen. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Felix Lopez.
Present.
Commissioner Haas.
Here.
Commissioner Luis Lopez.
I am here as well. Do we have any changes to the agenda, Mr. Dornkamp?
No changes to the agenda, Commissioner.
Entertain a motion, please.
Motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
Commissioner Felix Lopez.
Yes.
Commissioner Haas.
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Yes, item two, presentation and discussion with COGCC Commissioner, Mr. Jeff Robbins. I see Mr. Robbins on the call. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
So I guess what we'll start with is basically your presentation, if you have such of one this morning to the board, and then we will go into discussion and questions and answers. Does that sound okay with you?
That sounds great.
You have the floor, sir.
I'm going to share my screen, if that's okay. Looks like I'm not able to share my screen.
Yeah, try it now.
Yep. And there we go. Commissioners, can you see my screen and can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Well, thank you very much for allowing me to discuss with you things that have been going on at the Colorado Oil and Gas Commission this morning. I want to start by way of a little bit of background about who I am and my background. I was appointed by Governor Polis as the director of the Colorado Oil and Gas Commission in January of 2019, right after he took office. And then I became the chair of the commission in July of 2020, when the commission turned into a 5-member full-time commission. My background is not in the regulation or not in the oil and gas itself. I am was a local government lawyer and represented local governments throughout the state of Colorado, amongst other parts of my practice. I'm based out of Durango, Colorado. I was practicing law from January of 1996 in Durango. One of my initial clients was La Plata County. And in the late 90s and early 2000s, La Plata County was involved in regulating oil and gas. And in fact, we were challenged by the agency that I'm now the director of in a lawsuit in which they said that what we were doing in regulating oil and gas was illegal and improper. We defended that lawsuit and pretty much won that lawsuit. But from those early days, I became well acquainted with the local government's ability and inability to regulate oil and gas and take care of matters within their jurisdictions. From those early days, I then started working with different local governments across the state. I actually worked with Los Animas County for a bit about a decade ago and assisted the then commissioners in their understanding of oil and gas regulations and what they could and could not do. My more recent work was with Front Range communities that were working with oil and gas. And in that regard, I came to know then Representative Polis and provided him with legal advice and guidance around some of these issues as well. And so I was honored to be appointed director of the commission, knowing that it would be a different approach to oil and gas that we were going to work on a legislation to change the mission of the commission and to further empower local governments to regulate oil and gas. That legislation was enacted on April 16th of 2019. It's called SB 19-181. And with that, I will start rolling through my slides. And a lot of what we'll be talking about is what did 19-181 do and what has been happening at the commission over the course of the last 2 years, because we are fundamentally a different commission than historically what was comprised of the commission. The first main thing the SB 19181 did was it changed the mission of the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. It more neutralized that mission. Previously, the commission was a commission that had a mandate to foster oil and gas development as it protected public health, safety, welfare, the environment, and wildlife resources. Previously, the constraints on regulating oil and gas was that we always had to ensure things were technically feasible and economically practicable. Those constraints were removed in the bill, and now the constraints are we will regulate in a manner that's protective of public health, safety, welfare, the environment, and wildlife resources, and we'll do so in a manner that's reasonable and necessary. The second main theme from SB 19181 is it provided local governments with express authority to regulate oil and gas. Previously, local governments had authority to regulate oil and gas from their general land use powers, but that authority was preempted or overturned whenever the commission did something in a similar vein. So the commission was preeminent and could overturn a local government's use of their authority. That's no longer the case. The preemption doctrine is no longer the law in Colorado. Local governments have express authority over surface impacts to oil and gas, and local governments can be stricter than the state agency. So there now is dual regulatory authority. There's a regulatory authority at the state, and there's regulatory authority at the local government level. The local government authority is discretionary. Local governments do not have to regulate oil and gas, but if they want to do so, they now can do so, and they will not be preempted by the state agency. Couple of final pieces to kind of the overview. SB 19181 directed the COGCC to undertake a number of different rulemakings, and that's what I'm going to speak with you about today. And then SB 19181 rebuilt the commission twice. In May of 2019, this commission is the new volunteer commission, and it sat from May of 2019 until July of 2020. Then on July of 2020, the statute called for this commission, which is the new 5-member full-time paid commission. So we're no longer volunteers that come in once every 6 weeks and do commission business. Instead, we go to work each day, and we work for the state of Colorado and with local governments in the regulation of oil and gas. This is me. I'm serving, and each seat has its own unique attributes. I serve in the position for someone that is helpful to the commission to make good decisions. I'm hopeful that my 2 years working as director and now as commissioner will do that. This is Karen McGowan. She was the deputy director at CDPHE and is the public health seat. This is John Messner. John is the land use and local government seat, and he was formerly a commissioner from Gunnison County. You may be familiar with John from some of the workings you do. This is Priya Nanjappa. Priya has a background in wildlife management and biological resources and serves in the wildlife seat. And Bill Gonzalez was formerly a landman for Anadarko and Occidental and brings the industry seat to the perspective. So we undertook a number of different rulemakings. The volunteer commission started with the 500 series, which was an administrative rulemaking. It followed with an update to the flow line rules. That's the rules that the GCC regulates, the rules around the oil and gas facilities themselves. In June of 2020, the volunteer commission finished up the wellbore integrity rules, which is around groundwater protection. And then the volunteer commission started, and the professional commission that is now seated finished up the mission change rules, the change from fostering to regulating in a manner that's protective. And that was done in November of 2020. And I'm going to go into each of these in a little more detail. These are the mission change rules. We basically took our entire rule set, which is about that big, and we revamped all of them. with this mindset of regulating in a manner that's protective and in a manner that's reasonable and necessary. The rules were adopted on November 23rd and they became effective on January 15th. As director and now as chair, I undertook this rulemaking with a true commitment to transparency and public engagement. And part of that is based upon my historic work as a local government lawyer. I practiced before the commission. I would file pleadings with the commission, and I always felt that it was at times somewhat difficult for folks that were not within the oil and gas industry to feel heard. And so we wanted to make sure that all of our stakeholders, our local governments, our environmental communities, our operators, our community groups were all felt heard. So we did a number of things on this commitment to transparency and public engagement. We allowed any entity that wanted to be involved to be a party to our rulemaking. And we had over 93 parties signed up. That's not 93 individuals, that's 93 different groups. We heard from over 122 witnesses, and we conducted over 181 hearing hours of discussion, a little bit ironic in terms of SB 19-181. And I can say that for each hearing hour in the hearing we held, we probably prepped for 10 hours or more. We started hearings in our meeting room, but with COVID-19, we quickly ended up in the format that we're doing today, which was the Zoom format. And frankly, I suggest that this Zoom format actually allowed our parties to feel more able to engage because they didn't have to drive across the state and show up in Denver and find parking and go to our hearing room. Instead, they could just attend virtually as we're doing today. We were charged with addressing the key issues from SB 19-181, and I'm hopeful that we were successful with that. We readdressed the relationship between the commission and local governments, and I'll be touching on that a couple of times today. We addressed cumulative impacts for the first time. We addressed the concept of requiring alternative locations to be evaluated for the first time. We addressed setbacks and siting requirements. We addressed flaring and venting. We addressed wildlife protections. And we generally reorganized, modernized, and streamlined the rules by updating language and grouping together topics to ensure easier accessibility and better clarity. This is the rules that we updated through our rulemaking. And then to go into each series with a little more detail, the 200 series is our general rules, and here we improved due process for operators and stakeholders. We also addressed the transfer of permits. This is an area that I felt was very important. As you may be aware, when an oil and gas location first goes online, it produces a lot of mineral estate. It produces a lot of natural resource. And as the oil and gas well gets older, it tends to produce less and less. And often we would see operators transfer permits to different operators that would be involved in the later stages of an oil and gas facility. And we wanted to make sure that the new operator had the capacity and financial capacity to ensure that wells are appropriately plugged and abandoned at their end stage. And so we created new rules around the transfer process to ensure the financial and operational integrity of the new operator that would receive a well. The 300 series is our general permit series. Here we attempted to do a fair job of defining the relationship between local and state governments. As I mentioned, local governments now have express authority to regulate surface impacts of oil and gas development, but each local government will likely regulate in a manner that's akin to its own jurisdiction. And so we tried to create general rules that allowed the state agency to be a partner and a collaborator with the local government if they desire that. And so we'll find that there are many different areas in which the state agency tries to be a partner with local governments. And this was important to me because, again, as a previous local government lawyer appearing before the state agency, at times I didn't feel that there was a collaboration or a partnership approach, and that's what we want to do. And that's part of the outreach that I'm doing today. Myself and Commissioner John Messner, we've reached out to all the local governments across the state. And for anyone that wanted to hear from us, we're providing them this perspective so that you now know that you've got an ally at the state agency and we can help you. We can help with the understanding of the underground perspective of extraction of mineral resources, and we can help you as you regulate your jurisdiction. A second piece of the 300 series, for the first time, the COGCC incorporates environmental justice as a consideration for the siting facility into its rules. We, again, for the first time, made a commitment to gathering data and partnering with CDPHE on cumulative impacts. Again, for the first time, we created a new process that allows the commission, operators, and local governments to determine how best to avoid impacts by looking at alternative locations for an oil and gas facility. And we created a comprehensive area plan. This incentivizes sort of large area development as opposed to a one-off well here and a one-off well here. Instead, it suggests to the operator, come in with a big plan, and with that, you can cumulative impacts, you can minimize adverse impacts to people, to wildlife, and the environment, and you can receive an approval that is for multiple locations that is better all in all than if we were to do one-off approvals. So that's the 300 series. The 400 series is our operations and reporting. We expanded rules here to protect public water systems. This goes hand in hand with the wellbore integrity rulemaking, which protects water underground from oil and gas development. We clarified notifications and upped the ante for notifications to local governments if they desire them from operators about operations that are going on. And we made more robust our nuisance and our noise standards around oil and gas development. The next series that we looked into was the 500 series. This expands public access to commissioners. Again, we're a 5-member full-time commission. We established that all permitting decisions would now be at the commission level via a public hearing. Previously, permitting decisions were generally done by the director in an administrative proceeding without public access. We increased the definition of standing, which was previously fairly narrow. And we now ensure that all local governments and affected residents have an opportunity to be heard before the commission. And again, we just expanded public access and information at the commission. The 600 series, this has to do with safety and facility operations. And we expanded protective setbacks and siting requirements for schools and homes to 2,000 feet. So generally, we would require an oil and gas location to be further than 2,000 feet from schools and homes. But we did include numerous off-ramps where the facility could be located closer, such as if the property owner or tenant sign a waiver agreeing to have the well pad closer. If the commission finds after a hearing that the companies have taken substantially equivalent protections for protection. If the equipment that has the greatest noise and emissions is located further away, or if the well location is a part of an approved comprehensive drilling plan or comprehensive area plan. The 800 series is the rules around underground injection for disposal. And basically here we strengthen the protections for groundwater around UIC wells or underground injection wells. In the 900 series, we adopted a rule that establishes best in the nation standards to protect public health and prevent the waste of a valuable natural resource by prohibiting routine flaring and venting. That is something that had historically occurred at times. We still can allow it if the commission approves a gas capture plan, or where flaring is necessary because the wells are disrupted or during emergencies. We created a new approach to evaluate the cumulative impacts of oil and gas development through a new database that will be updated yearly by each operator to commission. And that information is also available to local governments. Then in the 1200 series, the last series, this is essentially around wildlife. We require avoidance of Colorado's most critical habitats through specific habitat protections, as well as preparation of an alternative location analysis. Again, that new ALA tool. We bring into the commission authority to, when appropriate, require compensatory mitigation. And we expanded rules to protect aquatic habitats with regard to siting and setbacks. So the new rules went into effect on January 15th. Between November 23rd, when they were adopted, and January 15th, when they went into effect, the commission staff worked really hard to revise all of our online forms. 11 forms were revised and 3 new forms were created. The commission is now able to receive new permit applications under the permits. And interestingly, we've had a backlog of permits of over 3,000 wells and 350 locations for a long period of time. And that backlog basically went away because now, in order to obtain an oil and gas development plan, you have to file under the new rules. And so the operators are going to be replacing the previous permits with permits they desire to operate under the new system. So as of March 1st, over 3,002 well applications and 342 2A well locations basically will go away and will be replaced with new applications. We have 3 more rulemakings this year coming up. One is around financial assurances. That's the bonding to ensure that oil and gas location has sufficient monetary bonding set up so that when it's time to plug and abandon, that the well will be plugged and abandoned. We're also revisiting our orphan well program. These are wells for which no operator is available to be basically on the hook for plugging and abandoning. We've got a large and robust and healthy orphan well program that continues, and we're looking at that vis-a-vis the financial assurances for other operations. We're also gonna look at worker certification for workers working on and around oil and gas locations and oil and gas process lines. And then we're gonna look into whether and to what extent we should charge fees. Historically, the commission has never charged a fee for an oil and gas permit. And if it did, the fee was capped at $200. SB 19181 removed that cap and allows commissions to charge reasonable fees related to the work around looking at an oil and gas development plan. So with that, I will conclude by telling you that I hope that you can see that the commission has done a lot of work. Our 140 employees are behind us in terms of the mission change. And we want to serve as a partner to local governments across the state. We are excited about a new mission to regulate in a manner that's reasonable and necessary and to protect. We believe that oil and natural gas continues to need to be produced, but we can do it in a manner that's protective. We had a lot of consensus around the rules that we adopted from operators and from local governments and from conservation and community groups. And we're excited to move forward into 2021 and beyond to serve as a companion to local governments if you desire us to be there. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions. And thanks again for allowing me a little bit of your time this morning to educate your community about what changes have occurred at the Oil and Gas Commission over the course of the last 2 years.
Thank you, Commissioner Robbins, for this information this morning. We'll open it up to questions here from our Board of Commissioners at this time. If you have any questions, please go ahead and feel free. Commissioner Lopez, Commissioner Haas.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Robbins, thank you so much for joining us this morning. My name is Felix Lopez, one of the commissioners. When you speak about the express authority that counties pretty much have in working in tandem with the state, If you go back to your statement, I think one of the things that you say that the counties don't have to, but they have the option to, in a sense, only regulate the ground, the surface location of the well. And that's pretty much as far as the county goes. If you can touch on that, and then I have a couple of other questions.
Yeah, sure. So as I mentioned previously, and in my previous life as a local government lawyer, I assisted local governments in attempting to regulate oil and gas. And I say attempt because there was not express authority delegated to local governments to regulate oil and gas. And so the regulation of oil and gas previously was through the implied authority under your general land use authority. You can regulate surface issues through your land use authority. The new statute expressly provides authority to local governments to regulate surface impacts and siting of facilities. So all the land use things that you do with all the other commercial or industrial operations, you now have that express authority to regulate surface relative to oil and gas development. The state still has authority to regulate some aspects of surface, environmental issues, wildlife issues, et cetera. And so there's dual regulatory authority there. But the state must regulate oil and gas. It's not an option. We will always regulate oil and gas. And we also have the only authority to regulate the underground parts of oil and gas. So the operational techniques, hydraulic fracturing and things such as that. And local governments don't have authority to regulate the downhole or operational aspects. And then finally, to speak to your question, Commissioner Lopez, the authority that's delegated to local governments, it's not mandatory. So a local government who decides they don't want to regulate oil and gas, they don't have to. And so if that occurs, then the operator would need to obtain a permit from the state agency, but not necessarily from the local government. But for local governments that do desire to regulate oil and gas, you now have better and more clear authority to regulate, and you're not going to be preempted by the Colorado Oil and Gas Commission anymore, like you were previously in certain areas where we attempted to regulate oil and gas at the local level. The commission would say, no, you can't do that, and we were stuck. That's no longer the case.
Thank you. And then if I may follow up, when you were talking about the 800 series, the underground injection, I believe that that's in reference to injecting water back to the extracted water back into the ground. And then the 1200 series also speaks of the environmental impact that this could have on the wildlife and so on and so forth. What was the final rulemaking as far as for instance, I'm speaking specifically Los Animas County, because the water that is extracted from the wells has provided such a great service to the wildlife habitat here in Los Animas County. It is even said by Division of Wildlife that some of these herds, whether it's elk, deer, and other wildlife, probably wouldn't survive if it wasn't for the water that is actually being made accessible for them. And then, of course, you have the agricultural community that is also benefiting from the extraction of the water for their livestock and so on. And then, quite frankly, even the county, for dust mitigation purposes, from time to time, the industry will provide a section spray water, certainly to mitigate the dust, and as we have been going through a drought. So if you can connect the 800 series, the injection for disposal, as well as the 1200 series, the protection for the wildlife.
Yeah, that's a great question, Commissioner Lopez, and I'm glad you brought it up. The discussion around that topic, you were well represented at the hearings. And I can't remember exactly whom it was, but they brought up the fact that water in Los Animas and some of your neighboring communities was a very important and critical resource, and that historically the ponds associated with allowing that water to be basically evaporated were important. In other areas of the state of Colorado, those ponds were detrimental to wildlife because the water was not as clean as it is in your community. And so what we ended up doing was creating a exception that allows the ponds to remain in areas, and you know, as long as the water is clean and it's beneficial to wildlife, then that is allowable. And so the historic practices that you speak of were allowed to continue as an exception. In other parts of the state where the water that comes out is very dirty and not conducive to wildlife and makes them sick, that is not allowed. So we tried to create a balance there to ensure the beneficial aspects in certain areas of Colorado were allowed to continue. And hopefully that was answers your question.
No, it does. I think, you know, from that perspective, looking at it from your definition of environmental justice, it pretty much benefits the Division of Wildlife and all the surrounding points. I mean, my last question would be, when we're talking about Los Angeles County, the regulatory perspective that that these operators have had in the past, I would imagine you being the litigant against them. How do you see it from the other perspective? And my question is more around the fiscal impact to operators. And I know you talked about before this, the cost of a well was $200, which sounds pretty minimal. How big was the commission before? Personnel, FTEs, and how? What is the comparison between then and now?
Well, to answer the last question first, we received approximately 24 new FTEs in SB 19-181. Because we are now regulating more robustly, we needed more additional individuals to help with that regulation, and including you know, the commissioners themselves, now that we're full time. And so that's that. With regard to permit fees, we have not started looking into that yet. That's this year's task. And previously, the statute said that you couldn't charge a fee more than $200. But even though the statute said you could charge up to $200, there's never been a permit fee for oil and gas development ever in the state of Colorado since the commission was started in 1951. And so we'll be looking at permit fees as we move forward this year. And then finally, just with regard to development of oil and gas, we obviously had a lot of operators that were stakeholders in the rulemaking that we were doing. And, you know, I echoed often that SB 19-181 was not to create a ban on oil and gas development. Oil and gas development is important to our economy. It's important to each one of us as we do our daily work. But it also was not to be a free ride for oil and gas development, and they should develop in a manner that's protective. So there was a balance. And once we were done with the rulemaking, you know, I spoke with many of our operators, and they all felt that, you know, it was going to be harder to get an oil and gas permit, but that they saw a pathway toward permitting. So I'm hopeful that this year shows that we've struck the right balance between protecting and development of the state's mineral resources.
Commissioner Hess.
Yes, Mr. Robbins, thank you so much for that exemption for Los Angeles County. Many of our ranchers have thousands of dollars worth of infrastructure built around those produced water outlets. It was really concerning in the beginning that the testing used to be done 12 years ago, 15 years ago, at the entrance to the stream bed. Now that all this testing is done with NMEBA right there at the wellhead, and then all those extensive testing that CDPH wanted to do later all happened there at the site. That made it really difficult to follow, to fall into line there, because as you know, probably the amoeba would die in its own, in a petri dish inside a contained unit in his own feces, he would die. And that the amoeba's not even relative to this county or this area of the United States. It came from California. So that was a real challenge. And thank you so much for the exemption for those ranchers. That's very meaningful. I live on the east side of I-25, and I wish there was a pipeline to bring me some of that water during this drought. I could really use it right now. That's the only comments that I wanted to make at this time. There may be more later. I'll listen to the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hess. We have any comments from Mr. Dorenkamp or Mr. Lucero?
I've got one. This is Phil Dorenkamp. You spoke about the uniqueness, and we know about it also, of the Raton Basin water. But I noticed in the regulations that for dust suppression, that produced water can't be used. And there was a time when our road and bridge department also used those produced waters for road maintenance itself. And I was wondering if there's any chance that the COGCC might revisit that. I think some of our operators in their waste management plans have actually wanted to use produced waters out of the Raton Basin for dust mitigation. And by extension, repeating myself, I'd like to be able to see our road and bridge department use those same waters for road maintenance, especially if to meet the agricultural water thresholds. And then secondly, and this doesn't pertain to Los Angeles County too much, but you had mentioned that the 3,000 permits that were in the pipeline, those applicants are going to have to reapply underneath the new regulation. I was wondering why, just out of curiosity, those weren't grandfathered in.
Yeah, well, let me answer the second question first. By creating a new permitting protocol, those permits are no longer approvable, basically, at this point in time. And we are allowing the operator to use the information from the previous permit when it replaces the permit with the new permit. We essentially created a new method for oil and gas development. We used to have a Form 2, which was the well, and a Form 2A, which was the location, a drilling and spacing unit application, and a pooling application. So four different processes. We now have put all four of those under the realm of one process called the oil and gas development plan. And so the operators have the ability to take the information from the previous pending permits and just basically put it under the new application, under the new oil and gas development plan application. So that is the approach that we took. We did not feel it was in line with SB 19-181 to grandfather 3,000 wells. Essentially, if you grandfathered and allowed 3,000 wells that were pending to be approved, you would have done away with the intent of 181, because that is almost all the wells that are planning on being permitted. So that was the reason that we created a process to replace the wells that the operators wanted to use. To your first question about produced water for road maintenance and dust suppression, I frankly, Administrator Dorenkamp, I don't have an answer off the top of my head, but I've made a note to go back to my team and discuss that with them. And I would like to get back to you individually about that. I don't want to speak out of turn and say something that's incorrect, but I think it's a legitimate question. And so I'd like to be able to go back to my engineering team, speak with them about it, find out what sorts of off-ramps may exist for communities where the water is safe and beneficial and meets ag standards to where they can use it for dust suppression. So if you would be so kind as to give me a chance to go back to my team, I'll plan on getting back to you.
Okay, thank you. And I think I know the answer to this question, but this is just showing my ignorance when it comes to mineral development. But Los Angeles County has been approached about some operators drilling for helium. COGCC has no regulatory authority over helium development. Is that correct?
I don't know the answer to that either, Administrator Dorenkamp. You're doing a good job of asking good questions. Let me put that on my list, and I'll plan on getting one of my engineers to get back to you on that as well.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have any questions from anyone else on the call today? Mr. Lucero, do you have any comments or questions?
No, the only I can tell you that the helium drilling, they did file a permit with the COGCC. I haven't received anything yet, but they're in process. So they did have to file with the COGCC to drill a helium
well. That was my thought as well, but I didn't again want to say something incorrect. But Mr. Lucero, I'll touch base with my staff to find out what the status of that is and get back to you on that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Commissioner Robbins, thank you again. That's why I have everyone go first, because they ask all the good questions, so they leave me with just a little bit of stuff. The only thing that I would have a question to COGCC regarding rulemaking in the future as technology changes and our oil and gas fields maneuver in the future, how open is the COGCC going to be when technology or these, say, particular Los Angeles County or the Raton Basin gas field that wants to expand with the prices increasing and stuff? How amenable will the COGCC be at looking and reviewing some of these rules and regulations that no longer apply to this particular gas field?
Yeah, I thank you for the question, Council or Commissioner Lopez. We're very amenable. I mean, I think one of the pieces to the puzzle that's changed is we've got a 5-member full-time professional commission. That's our job each day. And previously the commission was a volunteer commission and they met, you know, approximately once every 6 weeks. And so our capacity to look into changing circumstances, changing drilling practices, changes in production, and to ensure that our rules and regulations are consistent with best practices and that they change when things suggest that changes make sense, we're all in. We will definitely. And so, you know, we've pledged to operators that as they see things change, and if there needs to be, you know, alterations or methods, you know, I have an open door to listening and to opening up additional rulemakings if necessary.
Great, thank you. And then just the other comment I would have with regarding to our funding that's coming from taxes from the oil and gas field with Department of Local Affairs. We've seen quite a decrease and DOLA has seen a huge decrease in that funding. I don't know if this is a question or a comment. Do you possibly see that rising in the near future now that your commission has implemented the new rulemaking, and does that look obtainable in the foreseeable future?
Yeah. Well, the first answer to that is with COVID-19, with the Saudi-Russian dealings with oil and gas prices, oil and gas in 2020 took a dramatic dive in terms of production demand. In fact, prices for oil went negative in March of 2020 for the first time in history. And that then in turn mandated for operators to basically stop producing and stop drilling. And so we saw this massive and once of a kind change to production and to prices, which certainly impacted the taxes, the severance taxes associated with production of oil and gas. Oil and gas is no longer in the $20 a barrel, it's at $60 a barrel. And I believe that we're seeing oil and gas development on the upturn. At the same time, our oil and gas regulations are now in place, and we've tried to develop a regulatory protocol that will ensure continued production of oil and gas in a manner consistent with the statute, which means it's protective. And so we've got that in place too. So I think if you sort of add all that together, you are gonna see an increase in production because demand is coming back. You know, the price of oil is and gas is coming back, and our regulations are in place and allow for development. So I think the answer is yes. Okay. You know, and the proof will be as we look at how this thing shake out over the course of the next year or so.
Well, that helps, because as commissioners, and you involved, you're familiar with, well, the majority of our funding in, for Los Angeles County comes from oil and gas, a third of our funding. So that is truly appreciated. I have no other questions for you today. I just want to thank you for being on the call. Do you have any closing remarks, sir?
No, again, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you, to speak to your community. I've got a couple of homework assignments to get back to Mr. Dorenkamp and to Mr. Lucero, and I plan on doing that. And if you or your community ever has questions relevant to oil and gas, you know how to reach me, and I'd be happy to be available for further discussion as we move forward.
Great, thank you. Robbins, would you share with us your presentation? Send it to Mr. Dorenkamp.
I certainly will.
And then also one last, really, just thinking of, pardon the interruption there, Mr. Chair. One of the questions I had, does COGCC maintain a current inventory of uncapped wells throughout the state? And how are you mitigating that, as you talked about transferring permits from one operator to the other?
Well, we have an inventory of all wells within the state. And we have an inventory of the wells within the state that are orphaned. In other words, they don't have a responsible operator for them. For the wells that are orphaned, we rank them in terms of highest priority, and those are the ones that get plugged and abandoned by the state agency. We have $5 million a year that's appropriated to that orphan well fund, and we spend, and those dollars come from operators, by the way. It comes from severance taxes, and we spend that money to plug and abandon those wells that are of the highest priority. And then when we get rid of those, and we go to the medium ones, and then we go to the lesser ones. And so we consistently work toward plugging and abandoning those highest priority orphaned wells. And we routinely find more as our inspectors go out and inspect oil and gas facilities. With that, we've got a pretty good program around the orphan wells. And Chairman, I see Mr. Lucero may have raised his hand. He may want to speak to that as well. I'm not sure.
Mr. Lucero?
No, I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Okay.
You're just clapping out loud. All right, everybody. Thank you very much again for being with us this morning. At this time, I entertain a motion to adjourn, please.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Mr. Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Mr. Hess?
Yes.
Mr. Luis Lopez?
Yes. And Commissioner Robbins, thank you again for being with us. Information is very valuable. Thank you.